The day grew lighter and warmer as they floated along. The lands opened wide, the river broke up and wandered in 100 winding courses. And far away, its dark head in a torn cloud, there loomed the mountain. The lonely mountain. Bilbo had come far and through many adventures to see it, and now he did not like the look of it in the least. As he listened to the talk of the raftmen and pieced together the scraps of information they let fall, he soon realized that only the river offered any longer a safe way from the edge of Mirkwood in the north to the mountain-shadowed plains beyond, and the river was guarded by the Wood Elves' king. So, you see, Bilbo had come in the end by the only road that was any good. It might have been some comfort to Mr. Baggins, shivering on the barrels, if he had known that news of this had reached Gandalf far away and given him great anxiety, and that he was getting ready to come in search of Thorin's company. But Bilbo did not know it. The sun had set when, turning with another sweep, the forest river rushed into the Long Lake. Bilbo had never imagined that any water that was not the sea could look so big. And there would be Lake Town, not a town of elves, but of men, who still dared to dwell here under the shadow of the distant Dragon Mountain. As soon as the raft of barrels came in sight, boats rowed out from the piles of the town, and voices hailed the raft steerers. Ropes were cast, and oars were pulled, and soon the raft was drawn out of the current of the forest river, and towed away round the high shoulder of rock into the little bay of Lake Town. But the barrels were left afloat, while the elves of the raft and the boatmen went ashore to feast. They would have been surprised if they could have seen what happened down by the shore after they had gone. First of all, a barrel was cut loose by Bilbo and pushed to the shore and opened. Groans came from inside, and out crept a most unhappy Thorin. Wet straw was in his draggled beard, and he was so sore and stiff, so bruised and buffeted, he could hardly stand or stumble through the shallow water to lie groaning on the shore. It was some time before he would be even polite to the hobbit.
"Well, are you alive or are you dead?"
asked Bilbo quite crossly. Perhaps he had forgotten that he had had at least one good meal more than the dwarves, and also the use of his arms and legs, not to speak of a greater allowance of air.
"Well, are you still in prison or are you free? If you want food, and if you want to go on with this silly adventure, it's yours after all and not mine, you'd better slap your arms and rub your legs and try and help me to get the others out."
After a few more groans, Thorin got up and helped the hobbit as well as he could. In the darkness, floundering in the cold water, they had a difficult and very nasty job finding which were the right barrels. Knocking outside and calling only discovered about 6 dwarves that could answer. These were unpacked and helped ashore, where they sat or lay muttering and moaning. They were so soaked and bruised and cramped that they could hardly yet realize their release, or be properly thankful for it. With the help of Feely and Keely, Thorin and Bilbo at last discovered the remainder of the company and got them out. Poor fat Bomber was asleep, or senseless. Dori, Nori, Ori, Owen, and Glowin were waterlogged and seemed only half alive. They all had to be carried one by one and laid helpless on the shore.
"Well, here we are," said Thorin, "and I suppose we ought to thank our stars and Mr. Baggins. I am sure he has a right to expect it, though I wish he could have arranged a more comfortable journey. Still, all very much at your service once more, Mr. Baggins. In the meantime, what next?"
"I suggest Lake Town," said Bilbo. "What else is there?"
Nothing else could, of course, be suggested. So, leaving the others, Thorin and Feely and Keely and the Hobbit went along the shore to the Great Bridge. The guards were drinking and laughing by a fire in their hut, and did not hear the noise of the unpacking of the dwarves or the footsteps of the 4 scouts. Their astonishment was enormous when Thorin Oakenshield stepped in through the door.
"Who are you and what do you want?" they shouted, leaping to their feet and groping for weapons.
"Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, king under the mountain,"
said the dwarf in a loud voice, and he looked it, in spite of his torn clothes and draggled hood. The gold gleamed on his neck and waist. His eyes were dark and deep.
"I have come back. I wish to see the master of your town."
"If you come in peace, lay down your arms," said the captain.
"We have none,"
said Thorin, and it was true enough.
Their knives had been taken from them by the wood elves, and the great sword, Orcrist, too. Bilbo had his short sword, hidden as usual, but he said nothing about that.
"We have no need of weapons who return at last to our own as spoken of old, nor could we fight against so many. Take us to your master."
"He's at a feast," said the captain.
"Then all the more reason for taking us to him,"
burst in Feely.
"We are worn and famished after our long road, and we have sick comrades. Now make haste, and let us have no more words, or your master may have something to say to you."
"Follow me, then," said the captain, and with six men about them, he led them over the bridge, through the gates, into the marketplace of the town. From one great hall shone many lights. They passed its door and stood blinking in the light, looking at long tables filled with folk.
"I am Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thrall, king under the mountain. I return," cried Thorin.
All leapt to their feet. The master of the town sprang from his great chair.
But none rose in greater surprise than the raftmen of the elves who were sitting at the lower end of the hall.
Pressing forward before the master's table, they cried, "These are prisoners of our king that have escaped, wandering vagabond dwarves that could not give any good account of themselves, sneaking through the woods and molesting people."
"Is this true?"
asked the master.
"It is true that we were wrongfully waylaid by the Elven King and imprisoned without cause as we journeyed back to our own land," answered Thorin. "But lock nor bar may hinder the homecoming spoken of old, nor is this town in the Wood Elves' realm. I speak to the master of the town of the Men of Lake, not to the raftmen of the king."
Then the master hesitated and looked from one to the other. People were shouting inside the hall and outside it. The quays were thronged with hurrying feet. Some began to sing snatches of old songs concerning the return of the king under the mountain. That it was Thrall's grandson, not Thrall himself, that had come back did not bother them at all. Others took up the song, and it rolled loud and high over the lake. "The king beneath the mountains, the king of carven stone, the lord of silver fountains, shall come into his own. The woods shall wave on mountains, and grass beneath the sun. His wealth shall flow in fountains, and the rivers golden run. The stream shall run in gladness, the lake shall shine and burn. All sorrow fail and sadness at the mountain king's return."
The master saw there was nothing else for it but to obey the general clamour, for the moment at any rate, and to pretend to believe that Thorin was what he said. So he gave up to him his own great chair. Soon afterwards, the other dwarves were brought into the town amid scenes of astonishing enthusiasm. Thorin looked and walked as if his kingdom was already regained, and Smaug chopped up into little pieces. The dwarves' good feeling towards the little hobbit grew stronger every day. There were no more groans or grumbles. They drank his health, and they patted him on the back, and they made a great fuss of him, which was just as well, for he was not feeling particularly cheerful. He had not forgotten the look of the mountain, nor the thought of the dragon. At the end of a fortnight, Thorin began to think of departure. Then, for the first time, the master was surprised and a little frightened, and he wondered if Thorin was, after all, really a descendant of the old kings. He had never thought that the dwarves would actually dare to approach Smaug, but believed they were frauds who would sooner or later be discovered and turned out.
"Let them go and bother Smaug, and see how he welcomes them," he thought.
"Certainly, O Thorin Thrain's son, Thrall's son," was what he said. "You must claim your own. What help we can offer shall be yours, and we trust to your gratitude when your kingdom is regained."
Although autumn was now getting far on, and winds were cold, and leaves were falling fast, three large boats left Lake Town laden with rowers, dwarves, Mr. Baggins, and many provisions. The master and his counsellors bade them farewell. People sang on the quays. The white oars dipped and splashed, and off they went on the last stage of their journey. The only person thoroughly unhappy was Bilbo.